You're obviously here in Colorado Springs right now launching a study. What is that new study that you're looking at?
This is a second treatment study that we're doing here at Fort Carson. Both studies were focused on preventing suicide and reducing suicide attempts in active duty soldiers. We are comparing three different treatment strategies for a crisis. All three treatments actually are used pretty routinely in mental health care. We just don't know, is one of them better than the other? That's what we're trying to figure out, which one really prevents suicide attempts the most effectively and has the best long-term outcomes.
What are those treatments?
For post-traumatic stress disorder, there are two treatments that are gold standard. They should be frontline therapies. They are called prolonged exposure and cognitive processing therapy. Both of those therapies have very solid research bases, have been, and at least in prolonged exposure's case, has been around for at least 30 years. Both of them have recovery rates from PTSD anywhere from about 70 to 80%. A study was just published last year that found that those effects tend to hold for up to 10 years following treatment, which is remarkable in mental health care. The therapy approaches that we are now using with suicidal patients are now consistently reducing suicide attempts by 50%. Some of the other therapies for depression would be cognitive therapy or interpersonal psychotherapy.
And are those treatments based on the previous research study that you did?
Where this has been informed by previous research is, at least in psychotherapy, in like 12-session psychotherapy, which is what we did in the previous study, we have found that, you know, problem-solving is a major deficit in suicidal individuals. And in fact, the reason why people kill themselves is because they are experiencing very high levels of emotional distress, and they're not able to solve the problem that is creating. So they become hopeless, they feel in despair, and they say, the only option is to kill myself. So what we are basing some of these interventions are is, how do we teach them, you know, what the alternatives are, how to not kill yourself when you want to kill yourself. The second piece of information or knowledge that we've gleaned from previous studies that we'll be testing in this one as well is a very powerful protective factor for suicide is knowing what your reasons for living are. And what we have found in our previous treatment work is you can actually train a suicidal person how to remember what is worth living for. And when you remind them and they can access memories about what is good in my life, their hopelessness drops. And they say, well, maybe I don't want to kill myself after all.
How big is your sample size?
We intend to enroll at least 360 soldiers within the next year or two.
I mean, that what tells me is that there's a lot of suicidal people at Fort Carson.
What most people don't realize, there's a lot of suicidal people within society, but they don't know it. But yeah, definitely within the military, we are seeing increased risk. You know, we're seeing increased rates of suicidal thoughts, suicide attempts, and suicide deaths. And so at any of the large military installations, the tragedy is that many of us who focus on suicide research are finding enough people to enroll in these studies.
What is different about approaching the military in these acute circumstances than in the civilian world?
I think one of the biggest differences between military personnel versus civilians is they have a very different understanding of life and death. In the military, especially in combat arms professions, we explicitly train combatants not to be afraid to die. We teach them to walk towards death and to maintain their cool and their composure, and not to be afraid to be injured, to suck it up and deal with it, to bury any discomfort that you might have, to fix your problems yourself, because if you can't, you're going to drag down the rest of the unit. And so it's this paradox that we often find ourselves in, that the very qualities that are absolutely essential for us to have an effective military at the same time can serve as a risk factor for suicide, and it's this double-edged sword. And the question that I have that some of us are trying to work on is, when does this strength become a liability? When does giving your life become distorted and turn into taking my life? And how do you teach service members to tell the difference between that? And some of the preliminary work that we found is they do understand. They know the difference between giving versus taking life. The problem is that when they become emotionally distressed, they lose the capacity to differentiate those two.
So these soldiers that you will be studying are people who self-identify as suicidal. It's not necessarily someone that a doctor has said, I think you're suicidal. How many soldiers commit suicide or attempt suicide who have self-identified versus those who don't?
You know, as long as we assume that the only way to solve the suicide problem in the military is by getting soldiers and Marines and airmen into our mental health clinics, we will never solve this problem. And it's because of that very fact. The majority of service members never show up in a clinic. And so what we need to do is augment the doctors, augment going to the doctor with prevention, with addressing quality of life issues every single day, making sure people sleep well, they eat well, they're exercising on a regular basis, they feel like they belong, they have a strong sense of social support, that they never feel like they're isolated and that they're trapped and no one cares about them. And the way we affect that is through everyday interactions with one another. You know, it's addressing small conflicts. It's even just saying hi to one another. It sounds so silly and so simple, but what we know is that these little things, when you address them every single day, prevent the snowball effect that can lead to a suicidal crisis.
You know, Fort Carson and the Army has initiated some resiliency training within the past few years. I think the latest numbers came out that showed that suicides are up. So how has resiliency training affected what you're seeing?
To say that we are frustrated would be the understatement of a lifetime. It's infuriating to be doing so much, and yet we're still seeing these numbers go up. The question, though, that you have to ask, though, that we cannot answer is, if we were not doing these things, would it be worse? I do actually suspect that it probably would be worse if we were not doing resiliency efforts, if we were not providing treatment, because the reality is that we're getting better at preventing suicide. We're getting better at treatments. And now, at least with the study here done at Fort Carson, we have some scientific data that's starting to back up a lot of these ideas, and that there are treatments that work better than others, and we can actually significantly reduce risk for suicide and improve the quality of life for service members.